through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Yeah, the Mariners aren't great. They might not even be good, but they are enjoyable. I enjoy watching this team. What did Mike Salk say earlier on the show? He said there's a spirit to them, a spunk perhaps. I think he nailed that. I think you can go up and down the lineup and definitely pick that out most of the time. And certainly the pitching was better over the weekend. That was a huge relief. We bring in Shannon Dreher right now. Talk some Mariners with us. Shannon, let's start with the pitching. You know what? Let's go specifically to Taijuan Walker and the one-hit performance last week. I've always thought this guy, he's got the stuff, he's got the talent, he's got the size. Sometimes he doesn't have the confidence or the health. But if he's got those two things, is he going to be, like, better than average?
Well, I think that was always kind of the plan for him. I think that, you know, he was looked at as elite, as an 18, 19, 20-year-old, as far as possessing what you're talking about, what he has possessed. And we got to know him, and we saw some of the things derail him a little bit. But a couple of things have happened. He's gotten older, and he also had the game taken away from him for a little bit. And so I think that that gives him a little bit more of an edge and a little bit more of a freedom to just go out there and let it fly. He was a guy that would kind of nibble a little bit when he was out there. He would be sometimes hesitant out there. And I don't think we're seeing that, or at least we didn't see that in his second outing. I don't think we saw it in a lot of his spring and summer camp outings. He's got that size. He can use that to intimidate. He's strong. He's got, went on a pretty big fastball. He's got good enough mechanics that he is going to be in the zone. So just go out there and let your stuff work for you. So I think that, he can be better than average if he lets everything that he has play for him, if he trusts in it, and then the key, as you said, if he stays healthy as well.
Have you gotten to interact with a bunch of these players? I'm just curious about Taijuan Walker and whether or not you said he's older. I'm curious as to whether or not his demeanor, personality, etc., has changed.
I think it has a little bit in that, Taijuan has always been very open, very outgoing, very. There's an easygoingness to him as well. And I think that what has changed about him, and I think that that came from pitching in Arizona where he had some veterans with more of an edge there. I think that when it comes to competition, I think that he is a little bit more intense in that than he had been in the past. We saw that first thing. That was one of the big differences that we saw all the way back in spring training. The grunting on the mound, it sounds like a small thing, but when you're as big as he is, and now you're adding sound effects to it coming down the mound, there was kind of an intimidation thing with that, I thought. And there's also, I think, the mindset that he is always, like, at every step, and a little bit like Felix, always been the baby of the group, the young one, and also kind of personality like Felix, too, a good guy. Do anything you ask him to do. Help out anybody he can, with interviews, or if it's hey, we need you to do this charity or whatever, happy to do that. But I think that, kind of getting away from that and all of a sudden not being the youngest anymore and wanting to take that on, I think that's changed his demeanor a little bit. And then I think being around both Marco Gonzalez and Kendall Graveman, who have that edge to them as well. Hey, I talked with him in spring training, and he said he really loved how competitive Marco Gonzalez is and that he was kind of following him around a little bit more. And so I think that that probably does rub off a little bit.
Shannon, how important is it going to be for guys like Justus Sheffield and Justin Dunn to get off to a good start for these young players? Obviously, they had a rough going the first time around. There were some positive moments, but there was a rough go. But how important will it be for them to get their confidence going?
I think the confidence is there. I think it snowballed a little bit when you saw what happened to the other starters at the beginning. And then also, let's just remember, they're young starters. And I think that there was probably a little bit of nerves that first time out. And things were so different as well. And they were coming off a very different buildup to what they were doing. So I kind of take that first one and throw it out. Justice Sheffield just didn't even look like Justice Sheffield in that outing. This is a guy that didn't walk anybody, literally did not walk anybody in spring training or in summer camp, and came out and walked four batters in his first outing. And that, to me, tells me that I think some external things kind of got to him out there. And I think that once that happens, I think Justice in particular is far along enough to be able to recognize that. And I think he picks up, and I think he's okay this time out. If he isn't, I would give it another outing or two. I think he went through so much last year when he was up in Tacoma and just getting shelled, that I think that he has had kind of some of the worst already happen to him, that I don't know that he absolutely needs this. I think he's kind of learned how to get out of that. So I wouldn't panic if he didn't have a good outing this next time out. Justin Dunn's a little bit earlier because he's got less experience. I think it would be good for him to go out there and have a little bit more success.
So far, Shannon, in 10 games played here, Kyle Lewis has been an absolute all-star. Do you expect him to keep up this pace throughout the season?
Well, I don't know if you can look at the raw numbers and say that you're going to extrapolate that out to he's going to be a league leader in everything. But I think that what we are seeing is we're seeing a very consistent approach, and we're seeing a guy that's very comfortable in his mechanics and what he's doing at the plate. And he made some changes, coming into spring training, and then worked on them a little bit more in the shutdown. So, I think that this is who he is, but who he is, there are going to be the ups and downs as well. So, I think this is about, at this point of his career, I would imagine this is about as good as he can be, but I don't think the fall off has to be too much. I just think that there are times, you look at his BABIP right now, the batting average of the balls put in play, that, everything is kind of falling for him right now. And it's not luck, it's just happening. He's still hitting the ball hard. He still is, when he is hitting, getting into good counts and doing good things. He's striking out quite a bit. That's going to be a part of his game. At some point, I think you see that come down a little bit, but not a ton. It's going to go, that's going to be one of the trade-offs you see with the power that he has. But I think that we are getting a good look at who he is. I don't think you're going to see him tweaking a lot in the swing. I think you're going to see him staying in that approach and perhaps even developing it a little bit further. So I don't think that this is out of the ordinary for what we're seeing. And we are seeing pitchers start to make the adjustment to him, and he's conscious of it, and he's adjusting too.
Shannon, I have to tell you a very weird thought that I had, and I don't know why I thought this.
Okay.
But when J.P. Crawford got really, really upset because he didn't agree with a strike call, and he hits his bat into the Powerade tub and then just flips out, not like in an immature way, but like a passionate, like you're just fired up kind of way, I thought to myself, I can't tell if it's just because he's on the Mariners, but I kind of like that he's getting fired up, and I kind of like that the team has these kinds of like young personalities that are really passionate. And is he, who are kind of the leaders on this team or guys that you can see stepping into that role right now?
Oh, what was great about that was I'd never seen that from him. He's
right?
Probably the most chill player on that team. And so to see that, I'm like, okay. And what's kind of cool about that also is that, you were talking, I think Tom was talking about the energy that this team had at the top of the segment. Well, a lot of that is the group that came up from AA together. JP wasn't a part of that. So that you're just kind of augmenting that group that's already got something with that extra little bit of fire right there. And Scott Servais has repeatedly pointed to JP as being a guy that could be one of the leaders, that they would like to be one of the leaders. And I'm going to be honest, I looked at it and I'm like, I don't see it. Nothing against him. I just didn't see it in the personality. Well, perhaps that's something that they've seen a little bit behind the scenes and what we saw when he took it out on the Powerade tub before. But he has had just, he's got a terrific approach, a terrific eye. I love what he is doing at the top of the order right now. And so that kind of opens your eyes to that as well. Kyle Lewis, the same thing. This is a guy that we didn't really know. I talked about this on the postgame show last night, but he was just the hurt guy. And then he was the guy coming back from being hurt. And we didn't really know who he was personality-wise. It's like every interview you had with him was health-related. And then, oh, isn't it a miracle that you're back after such a catastrophic knee injury? And so now we're seeing him healthy and what he does. And I see a little bit of an edge to him at times, too, which is a little bit surprising in that all of his interviews are he's a little bit quieter, but it's in there as well. Evan White, it's in him as well. That's why they signed him to that deal. He's got to get going, but let's give him a chance. He just jumped from Double A. So I think there are multiple players. Of course, Marco on the pitching side as well that you could look to in that regard.
Shannon, I feel so validated. Like, I saw that and I was like, I've never been more excited to see someone hit a Powerade container with a bat. And I don't know why, but I was like, yes, that's what you want to see. Last question for me really quick. What specifically are you watching for tonight?
Okay, well, first of all, when we all get back to the office, I'm bringing my bat, Stacey, and I will find a Powerade or the equivalent
yes,
in the
I would
office
love it.
And slam it into it.
Deal.
I forgot what the question was.
Oh, what are you watching for tonight in the series finale?
Oh, man, I'm going to watch what's going on the mound and also to see if they can come back and tie this one up. Also watching Evan White a little bit. And you look at the numbers and you want to get him going. And while, he's still, I think he's got 5 hits so far in the season, he is starting to take the walks a little bit. He's got one of the hardest hit rates on the team and he's got the second most hard hit balls in the team. So there's a little bit of luck playing into that. But I want to see that start turning into hits. I want to see where you go from there. And I also want to see just, how long we can see J.P. Crawford continue to do what he's doing at the top of the order and, see if they can continue to keep kind of the collective approach that they've had at the plate. This has kind of been good to see them not just sitting back and waiting for a home run. They've got a couple of guys that can hit them, but I like seeing the innings that we've seen, not necessarily in the last few days, but before that in the Anaheim series where they can put those crooked numbers up on the board. So a lot to watch, and then who comes out of the pen.
At the risk of ending the interview, Shannon, on a down note, how much patience are they going to have with Vogie? How much patience are they going to have with Vogie and Malix?
Oh, Malix, I don't think has had even any opportunity right now. He hasn't played very much. I guess Vogie hasn't for that matter as well. But I think that you look at where they're at and Malix, isn't a priority player. You look at the number of prospects that they have in the outfield. So I think what's most important about Malix right now is he's a true outfielder and you don't have many of them up right now. And I think you also have to give him a little bit of a chance to get going because he played in all of 5 games in the lead up because he was late because of testing. So I think I think you use him where you can. And I think there is a decent amount of patience. And we've talked about Vogelbach before. He's out of options. This is it. There are players that are coming. You have to hit this year. I thought it was interesting that Scott Service put him in the cleanup spot yesterday. And I think that was, attempting to show him a little confidence. He rewarded him with it and came out early and got the RBI, but after that, then not much. And I think the biggest thing, again, it's not going to necessarily be results right off the bat that you are looking for from him, but what's the approach? Are you going up there? Are you swinging at the right pitches? Are you doing what you want the DH to do? And he can get a little passive up there. He can be looking for that walk, and it's you need him to be swinging the bat. So they've got other options. We've seen that, but I think more than anything, they're trying to be careful with him. They're trying to set him up the best to come in and giving him those days to work and perhaps not hitting him against some of the tougher left-handers right now, but you can only go so far with that. There has to be some sort of return.
Shannon, thank you very much.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Shannon.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by MM Comfort Systems.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Jake, the Seahawks are re-signing Brandon Jackson. They've got one open roster spot. What will they do with it?
Well, to me, it's hard to know and determine what they are going to do with it. I still believe, even with the re-signing of Brandon Jackson, they signed him to more of a veteran minimum deal, not really any guarantees in there, which I think will be beneficial to the team and give them flexibility still. But they have, like I've said before, an opportunity to add to this defense, whether that's on the defensive end position or at the defensive tackle position, which I think is most likely. That to me is still very much on the table and a very needed add to this roster. So I think they're going to wait things out and see how things progress over the next week or two. And hopefully they're able to add somebody like, Damon Snacks Harrison, Tim Jernigan, Marcel Darius, or Mike Daniels. So I think that those are guys that are definitely on the eye of the Seahawks right now.
Second down. Casey, what are we missing right now without fans and reporters at training camp?
Now, I'm going to preface this by saying there might be a handful of reporters, but we're going to have a pretty limited insight into what goes on at training camp, and now without preseason games, it's just going on all through August. So there are a couple things that I think we're going to miss being able to see, and they're very telling, and I think that that's sad. But I'll get started with work by players who may only get a handful of snaps. That's my number one. A prime example of this is Travis Homer. I remember Jake was really high on him after the draft, and I just didn't know anything about him. But going to training camp and seeing him work in training camp, in addition to Jake's high opinion of him, is what originally changed my mind, because you saw him out there, and this is a guy that's at the bottom of the running back rotation, but he's going 110% on every single snap. And especially early on in training camp, guys are coming back in, you have veterans that have been there, and they don't need to secure their spot. Like, it's just kind of like an easy going first couple days. Not this guy. He was 100% all the time. And so there's little things like that where you see a player's work ethic, or you see him trying, or you see his focus, and it starts to shape your own opinion of that player in a way that 10 snaps in a preseason game might not let you do. So that's one really important one. Another one that I really like to see is player interactions on the sideline. It's really helpful to see things like Cody Barton going up to talk to KJ or Bobby after a play, and you start to see young players get really involved. You also see older players that evolve as leaders. So I even remember a couple years ago when Bobby Wagner was kind of first becoming that kind of team captain role, you would see him standing on the sideline where the defensive players are lined up, almost getting like too far onto the field, where you're like, dude, you're like 50 yards from the huddle right now. But he's in there, and he's yelling at players, encouraging them. So there's a lot of little nuggets like that that you miss out on.
Third down. Jake, what's the biggest issue you see with the Pac-12 hashtag We Are United movement?
Well, the biggest issue that I see right now is really two-part. Is one, for me, I was on board, and I am fully on board with players actively trying to make their situations better in a system that takes advantage of them. I think that, you know, when they were initially talking about COVID and they were wanting better protection and more transparency from universities, I was fully on board. But using a pandemic to leverage and attempt universities to give in to your unrealistic financial compensation demands, to me, that's where I think they went wrong. And also, you have to realize as a player, if you are trying to sit out the season, threaten the season, or threaten your ability to play because of what you're upset with in terms of these demands not being met, then this isn't a utopia. You don't get to sit there and sit out of the season and expect to have your scholarship there waiting for you. So you have to be willing to sacrifice some things, some pretty costly things. And I think that those are two things right now that the players may not be fully understanding when they came out with this hashtag.
Can we punt fourth down until the final segment? Because we only have a minute, and I think you need to like expand on this particular question.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
So
I'm really
interested. What do you want me to expand?
Well, the question I'm about to ask you, I'm really interested in what the answer is, and I want you to like go for more than 30 seconds, which is what we have right now.
Yeah. Well, it's difficult because I think in this situation, I'm always for the players saying, hey, we want to have better compensation. We want this and that.
Jake. I mean, we'll move your fourth question to the final segment of the show. That's what I mean.
Yes, I know that. I know that.
Okay.
You want to talk more about this particular issue, right?
No, I don't. I want you to stop so I can do What's on Tap.
Oh,
this
okay.
is What's go. On Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Brought to you by Dietz & Watson. So, folks, What's on Tap?
Sorry, I confused Jake there. I'll blame myself.
Way to go, Tom.
Mariners taking on the A's tonight. Series finale. Pre-game at 5. First pitch at 6:10. Boy, these games are getting earlier and earlier. It'll be on 7:10 ESPN Seattle. Justice Sheffield taking on Frankie Montas. Frankie Montas. That's a heck of a baseball name. Frankie Montas
name.
From over on Mulberry Street. All right, we'll be back in a second with NFL headlines. By the way, 710-710 is brought to you by the Vizzy Hard Seltzer. That is our text line. NFL headlines are next. Players are creating their own bubbles. Is that a good idea? 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
News, news, news in the world of the NFL. Now, the New Orleans Saints... Excuse me. The New Orleans Saints are doing something that every baseball team should be doing. They're creating their own bubble, even though Sean Payton's not calling it that. They're calling it a sequester. But all of their Tier 1 and Tier 2 employees, which is like 150 people, are going to move into a hotel until September, at least for training camp here. Nobody outside that organization will have access to that hotel. So their comings and goings will be monitored. My guess is that they're only going to be going back and forth between this hotel and training camp. So they're not going to be going to any casinos like the St. Louis Cardinals did the other day. I don't understand what... I mean, I know we're doing NFL here, but I feel like this headline ties into baseball. These problems that the Marlins are having, the Cardinals are having, I thought that there were pretty hard and fast rules against going out to public places while the baseball season's going on. And here the New Orleans Saints are doing this thing to try to protect against that very thing. Smart on their part, but also it's common sense to me. What do you think, Stacey?
I mean, you mean it's common sense to just be able to stay home? Like you're saying, the stuff that they're protecting against with the bubble is stuff you should be doing anyway?
To sequester themselves, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if anything, what the bubble prevents is maybe incidental contact, because it's like the second that you're outside of that, and this is the fear of really anyone in the MLB or NFL right now, the second that you're outside of that, it could be like your wife or sister or someone that isn't playing went to the store and maybe somehow got it. I mean, again, like it's so incredibly contagious that I think the fear is outside of the bubble. It could even be accidental. You don't even intend for it to happen. You just go home and, you know, someone else in your home has it. So I think if anything, the bubble eliminates that. But I mean, that's a pretty intense approach.
It is an intense approach, and it's one that I have felt for a while that all these players, if they want to do their part ensuring the safety of, one, their family members, but two, also themselves and having the chance to actually go through a full season, they need to create some sort of bubble. Now, you can take it into your own hands and the way the Saints are doing it, or you can try and be very cautious or precautious as possible in terms of if you're staying at home, make sure that you're limiting the amount of exposure. And that would obviously be common sense, as Tom, as you described it. But you're also talking about single 20-some, you know, young 20-some-year-old players who might not always make the best decisions or best choices. And so you're relying on everybody to do their part and make good choices. So I applaud what the Saints are doing, but it'll be interesting to see how successful the Saints organization will be compared to others. Pretty interesting that the Seahawks have been relatively successful up to this point as well.
Jake, every decision I made when I was 23 was a great one, okay? So they can do the same thing.
Hearing the stories from your 23-year-old days or younger days, that matches up.
I'd be such a mess if I were on one of these teams. I would be like patient zero, just infecting everybody.
But it's because you went to a Fish concert. They're like, well, yes. What'd he do? It's like the one time I got caught skipping class, but I just hid in the bathroom. And my mom was like, you didn't even, like, go leave campus?
Like, no. At least do something cool.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, these guys are going to casino. That, you know, sadly, Fish canceled their summer tour, but that's okay. We won't go there.
Yeah, we don't
All
have
right, to. More COVID. More COVID news, by the way. I said at the top of the show, this is going to be one of those days where it's like, we're trying our darndest to have fun. But, you know, it's just one thing after another. Doug Peterson, head coach of the Eagles, tested positive for COVID. So did Gardner Minshew the second. And Matt Stafford.
Take Man, whatever me instead. I hear about, That's every coup
Whenever
right
I
now.
Hear about these guys getting sick, so many of them, I just keep thinking to myself, man, it is so easy to get this virus. Like, how have I not gotten it yet? I mean, maybe I haven't. I don't know it.
Yeah.
But like, it just seems like there's so many athletes. If we were to put together a list, we'd be probably up over 100 by now, right? Maybe more.
Getting close.
So, yeah, I mean, I just wonder when are we going to come to a point where somebody gets seriously ill? I just hope that day doesn't come. That's my primary concern, especially for guys who are older, like Doug Peterson. I know he's not old, but he's older than 20. So that whenever I hear about this, that's my biggest concern, Stacey.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that for any of us, the fear is, I mean, you look at Pete Carroll, who's in his mid-60s to late-60s. I mean, it is incredibly unlikely that a young person will become seriously ill. It's not impossible, which is why they're having an abundance of caution with all of it. But another part of the fear is, hey, there's a lot of much older people in that building. And there's also a lot of people that might be cancer survivors or dealing with other maybe immune disorders or diabetes, just other things that put them at risk. So there's a lot of people in and around the sport, not just on the field, that have to worry about this. So I completely understand. I mean, I think the worst fear for anyone is this kind of elephant in the room we're not talking about, which is what if someone gets seriously sick?
Well, up to this point, they have been fortunate that guys, coaches like Doug Peterson and players like Matt Stafford and Gardner Minshew, that they've been asymptomatic in this situation. I think that is something that is positive, that they are looking to, re-enter, get back in as safely and as quickly as possible. So that part of it has been positive so far amongst athletes in this entire, transition of trying to reopen professional sports back up. Is you haven't had too many situations where you've had a player that's been severe symptoms of the virus. So hopefully that continues to stay that way, especially for the NFL season that will be going up against the flu season at some point as they get into November, December, and January.
One of my friends got tested for COVID the other day, by the way. She just wanted to, you know, she's got kids. She wanted to see if she had had it or has it. You guys know what that test entails? It's just them. They take a big dowel or a Q-tip.
I've seen it.
And they stick it down your sinus.
Yep.
Like it's.
My sister had it done. She said that it doesn't. Oh, man, I got country there for a minute. She said it didn't. It didn't do nothing. She said that it didn't hurt, but it felt really weird. Like, she didn't know how else to describe it. She was like, when they stick the Q-tip in and then take it out, you're just overcome with the need to, like, sneeze and, like, scrunch up your face. That was her experience, anyway. I was worried it would hurt.
When I used to go over to get my sinus, after I had my sinus surgery 5 years ago, the guy, he would take a dowel out that was about a foot and a half long and stick that thing down my sinus. Oh, my goodness.
You guys, someone on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line said, I'm literally in line at a testing tent right now. We'll keep you updated. Yes, please do, 360. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Tell me if it hurts.
I don't want to hear it.
Well, yeah. If you got to get tested, you got to get tested. All right, somebody tell me why bringing back Brandon Jackson is a good idea. Jacob.
Jacob.
Well, the reason why it is a good thing to bring Brandon Jackson back is because of familiarity. It's because of depth. It's because you have somebody that knows your system over the last couple of years. And obviously, I think Brandon Jackson, from a personality standpoint, has fit in very nicely here with the Seahawks in terms of having a leadership role. He's been a guy that many players have referred to when they talk about guys that they're close with in the locker room. So I think that he's had a very positive impact on the Seahawks locker room, and I believe that that ultimately is why they brought him back and want to keep him in the fold.
Any thoughts, Stacey, on Brandon Jackson and whether or not he's going to be the man to bring it all together?
It does make me wonder if they're going to bring back anyone else. I mean, was the move because they didn't see him as being part of the team, or was the move to waive him and Joey Hunt to free up space and restructure those deals? Because then you start wondering if Joey Hunt could be coming back next.
You can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app, powered by Dubin Law Group. I want to hear next about what Jake went through, both the night before and on the first day of his first NFL practice. Did it give him the willies, or was he okay? We sum it up next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
Quick note on the Seahawks. Stacey, Rashad Penny is going on the what list?
The PUP list. Or the pup list. Yeah.
The pup. I like pup better.
Okay, you can use pup. That's fine, Tom. It's your world. We just live in it.
That was the expectation for him, still rehabbing from his torn ACL. And, of course, as Pete Carroll said, we're hearing positive reports.
Well, they said that they hadn't really had a chance to look at him, obviously, with a really weird offseason. So he'll be coming into the building Thursday. They'll get a chance to look at him Friday. But yeah, the PUP list, not just precautionary, but also has different rules than the regular season pup list. So they can take him off of this at any time. He doesn't have to sit out 6 weeks just because he's on this right now.
All right, Jake, that first year training camp, it's the night before the first day. I'm thinking back to like my college days, like, oh my God, what am I doing here? What's going on with my life? I don't know anybody. What am I going to do? Am I going to fail? What's going to happen? What were you thinking as far as what was going to happen and what did happen?
For me, it was very simple. I was just so excited to be there and so excited that I was actually living out my dream that, you know, since I was a young kid, that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a professional quarterback. I wanted to be in the NFL someday. And for me, it was just exciting to be able to live out that dream after everything that I had to overcome and go through through my college career and on my path to try and get noticed into the NFL. So for me, I had a very different approach than I did in college. In college, I was very conscientious of everything that was going on. I was worried. I was trying to live up to expectations. I was trying to do this and that. And by the time I got into the NFL, it was like, look, kid, this is your opportunity. This is your shot. You don't know when it's going to end, when is going to be your last time putting on, a football helmet and pads and just go out there and rip it and have fun. And for me, that's what I was able to go do and had great experiences my rookie year with the New York Jets and loved every minute of it when I was out there in training camp and what I was able to do. So I think for me, that mindset was a lot different. And you get guys in all different ranges, guys that are excited, guys that are prepared, veterans that are just like, hey, this is my eighth year. I know what I'm getting myself into. But I think the very first training camp that anybody has, the intensity level just goes to a whole nother spot. You're in OTAs and you're practicing, but when you get to training camp, that's when everybody turns it on. That's when the fans start coming out. That's when the media starts coming out. And so you really start feeling the pressure and the expectations and the need to perform every single day of practice. And it was I just remember there, you know, thinking more of gratitude than anxiousness.
Did practicing with Seattle feel different than practicing anywhere else, or is that just something that we hear as members of the media?
Yeah, players say it all the time. They're always so positive about the Seahawks. But to be honest with you, yes, absolutely. I mean, the fan interaction was so much different than my experience with the New York Jets. I mean, half the fans that were at the New York Jets, I swear, they were just there to heckle the players.
They were heckling you guys at training camp?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's hardcore.
Here's the thing. I mean, like, you know, Fitz and Geno Smith. I mean, Geno will tell you, if we get a chance to sit down with Geno during the year for the huddle, which I hope we will at some point, I mean, he'll tell you, I mean, the fans were absolutely ruthless to him. Any bad ball, anything that happened,
wow.
I mean, you know, and some of the backups, even the backup to the backup, like myself, were probably the more popular guys on the team because you throw a good pass and be like, see, Geno, that's how it's supposed to be done. Like, they were ruthless, absolutely ruthless. But the Seahawks... The Seahawk fan base, the 12s, unbelievable, so supportive, so energetic throughout practice. To me, that was such a fun experience to be able to experience training camp as a Seattle Seahawk. I'll never forget those memories. I was actually just looking back on photos of Jackson was just being born and having my family out to practice after practice and out on the field and, you know, just cherishing all those memories. They're amazing.
You know, you were helped by one factor, okay? When you're the new kid in school and you're automatically hanging out with the coolest kid in school, i.e. Russell Wilson in this case. Like, you quarterbacks are in the same room together. You're hanging out together. Like, that probably helps a bunch. It's like you can walk right alongside or behind number three.
That's what I think of Jake's radio career with us, is he automatically was hanging out with the popular kids. And then it gave him credibility.
Of course it does. Why would you want to hang out with any other show? I mean, like, this is the one to be a part of.
This is what the cool table.
Listen to.
Yeah.
This is what the cool kids do.
We're hip.
I mean, come on.
That's for sure. It's these conversations, it's listening to you guys right now is the reason why
it was a
no-brainer choice for me. And, yeah, I mean, some of that transition does make it easy. But, Tom, at the same time, in NFL training camps at the quarterback position, you are looked at as the guy that has to have the information. I mean, there are players, literally, there are players that go from one day to the next who don't even remember the playbook. So they're looking to you in the huddle and say, oh, what do I have? What was that? What was that? And you're the one that has to figure it all out, because if you can't line up, if you can't spit out the play call, then the coach is going to be mad at you, not necessarily that other individual player. So there's a lot on a quarterback's plate, and it's a lot to handle, and it can be stressful at times. But, you know, I think that's the fun part about the position.
When did they give you the playbook? Like, I'm not sure when they signed you exactly, but, like, it seems to me that certain guys would have more time to prepare for training camp if they could study that playbook, you know, for months as opposed to days.
Well, most players on a roster, they're given the playbook, you know, as you're going into OTA. So you get it far enough in advance every single year, and you go through those plays during OTAs. You walk through it together. The Seattle Seahawks and every other NFL team, they've been through the playbook virtually this year because they didn't have a physical OTAs and practices at their facilities. But they were able to go through the playbook. So they've been through it now at this point. They've been through it at least two times. And now they'll be going through it a third and a fourth time as they prepare for the season. So these guys really shouldn't have too many excuses, other than the guy that I feel really bad for is a player that gets injured during training camp, and now they have to bring in somebody else right in the middle of training camp, and they have no clue what the playbook is, and they're asked to learn everything on the fly immediately. Those are the guys that I feel really bad for.
That's really impressive, too, when you think about it. Those guys don't get enough credit for that.
Isn't that how Geno came in?
Well, Geno came in, yeah. He actually came in during OTA, so right in the middle of OTAs after the draft. So he had some time. He had the offseason. He was competing with Paxton Lynch, you know, pretty much the entire offseason. So,
Jake, do you remember when, speaking of the playbook, you tried to teach Tom and I plays and we were really good at it?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. I think we're going to have to bring that back at some point just to have a little fun with it. We were trying to get you guys to call out some plays.
I thought we excelled. I mean, I really thought we nailed it. Right, Tom?
I did.
By the way, side note, happy birthday to the Graz.
Yes.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Graz. It's exciting.
The big 6-0 for
yep.
the Graz.
Yep.
Wow. Quite a milestone.
That's awesome.
Talked to the Graz yesterday. Graz recommends documentaries and movies to me quite often. There's one on Netflix about the mafia in New York City that he's watched. So.
Can I make a recommendation? You guys, if you want to cry and feel great, watch a 40-minute documentary on Netflix called The Speed Cubers. It's great.
Rubik's Cube?
It's about a Rubik's Cube competition. If you're missing sports and you need some kind of competition, watch this.
I love it.
It's so heartwarming.
All right, you heard it here first. Rubik's Cubes. We're back tomorrow, 7:10 ESPN Seattle.